Well, hello everyone. Welcome to Halo Outpost Houston. How has everyone joined their outpost so far? Good?
Woo!
Yes? Yeah.
Very good. Very good. Welcome to the Foundations and Pillars of the Halo Community panel. We're going to be talking about the origins of the Halo community, where the Halo community has come and gone, and where we are today. And we've got quite a panel of people to talk about different aspects of the community. So I'm going to go ahead and start with myself. I am Dustin Pettigrew. I go by Duststorm Online. I am the owner and host of a podcast called Pod Tackler. We're a weekly Halo podcast that covers anything and everything Halo. And then we'll start to my right and then go on down the row.
I'm DJ Blue PDX. I am the event programming manager here for Halo Outpost Discovery. I'm also a mixer partner, former executive producer for GriffballHub.com, which is kind of where I got started in competitive Griffball casting that. I'm one of the shoutcasters for Fortnite and Apex Legends for Hype Zone. If you've ever been to PAX, you've probably heard me screaming on a microphone in front of the mixer booth. So, yeah, that's what I do. Otherwise, I DJ and do this.
All right, and I'm Brian Sullivan, otherwise known as Ragemore Nerd. I'm a co-founder of PlayGriffball.com and administrator of the American Griffball League of America, otherwise known as the AGLA. Former administrator of Griffball Hub over there with DJ as well. And the AGLA has been running competitive Griffball since 2007.
All right, hello, I'm Duquesne23. I am a streamer on Mixer and a YouTuber and just play a lot of custom games, Forge, all that good stuff.
All right, my name is Travis. I am actually a retired co-host of the Drunken Halo podcast, and this is my brother.
Hi, I'm Justin. I'm an wrong meeting. Sorry, it's been a long day. I'm Justin Bryce. I am the co-founder and current host of Drunken Halo, Drunken Halo podcast. We started back in 2011. To my deep shame, we have not been able to put out shows recently on a very regular schedule, but hoping to remedy that in the very, very near future. But thank you for having us, and I will pass the proverbial mic over to you, sir.
I'm Stephen Pullum, also Ace of Spades card, co-creator of Cyberline Films, also Cyberline Games, depending on what year you look it up. And we were most known for doing custom games, mostly custom game night stuff. That's what we currently and used to do most every day. So
cool. So we got quite a breadth and plethora of different communities represented here, but we're going to start at the very beginning with the birth of a Halo community. Let's just quickly go down the row, and how long has everyone here on the panel been involved with Halo to some capacity? We'll start down on the end with Steven.
So I didn't have as much experience with the original Halo just because I didn't own an Xbox on the outset, but I think it was Halo 2 that I went over to my buddy's house all the time and played. And officially Halo 2 Vista, that's when like it really started firmly seated for me. So.
And I didn't hear the question.
When did you get your start or involvement with Halo going?
It was actually, I watched one night, there was nothing on TV, and I know I wanted to just like veg in front of the TV, and I like to watch G4 a lot. And so this thing was coming on G4 after like Attack of the Show, and I didn't feel like finding the remote, so I was like, whatever, I'll watch this. And it was actually the lead up to the launch of Halo 3. And, just starting, it was like a 4 or 5 or 6 hour like countdown kind of thing. And, I started watching it thinking like, whatever, this is on. I don't feel like changing it. But by the end of it, I was like, I have to go out and get the legendary version of this game. Like, I am highly, highly intrigued. And so that's what I did the next day. But I really didn't start a love affair with it until ODST. And it actually kind of, this is a nice segue between you and I, because...
Right, yeah. I really regret not getting into just Halo in general until the tail end of Halo 3. I've always been more of a sports gamer, FIFA, Madden. And if anyone knows Justin, when he gets interested, he dives headfirst, and that's it, just all consuming with him. And it was a good way for us. He was like, hey, I know you're not too big into the story, but ODST's got this mode called Firefight. All you got to do is just kill the enemies. I'll teach you how to do it. And we kind of just went from there. And then we, I guess that was around ODST. When was that? 2011? Well, we started the show right around Reach.
Like a couple of months after Reach came out, like Bungie was still in charge of it.
Like we would spend nights just playing Halo and talking about it. And he's an audio whiz. And he was like, hey, let's just start talking about the show. We do it every night anyways. Let's record it. And then just kind of went from there. So we really came in tail end of Halo 3 and then Halo Reach.
But like our love affair really started with us being able to play ODST Firefight, you know, and, you know, we've always kind of been, you know, somewhat close, you know, once we weren't little kids anymore. But like, once we started playing Halo, it was like our relationship absolutely just went to like another level. And man, playing those early Firefight games is some of like the best memories of my life. Yeah,
for sure.
So yeah, that's how we got started.
Yep.
I got started whenever CE released. I started playing Halo. Parents bought me an Xbox whenever I was in high school. Got me Halo. Kept playing ever since then. And I've just started just going all the way through Halo 2, Halo 3, forged in Halo 3, but never really got into the community and stuff until about Halo Reach. That's whenever I started really concentrating on forging and just got started a YouTube channel just to, you know, showcase my maps just so maybe people will download them and try them out. And then that's whenever I started getting in like customs community and everything like that.
So I started playing Halo back during Combat Evolved, and I would just play the campaign for hours on end almost every day because I was just completely obsessed with it. That continued in through Halo 2. It wasn't until Halo 3 came around when I started playing on Xbox Live and started it just changed everything for me. Come the Reach days, that's when I started to get really involved into Griffball, and that's when you get involved into a community and it turns into more than just a game. That's where you meet friends, and now I would never have thought that 10 years later I'm here on a panel in a ridiculous event made by a very close friend of mine over there in DJ. Yeah, it's come a long way.
For me, I got my start in Halo, kind of dabbled in it. In Halo 1 and Halo 2, I had some childhood friends growing up that had an Xbox and had Halo. But I really didn't start diving into Halo until I heard about a podcast called Podtacular, which I started listening to a year after it came out. And I didn't have an Xbox or Halo on PC at the time, so I actually started just listening to Halo and reading up on Halo before I could even play it. And then my parents got me a laptop for college, so I started playing Halo that way. Then got into Halo 2 Vista with my good friend Ace down there. And then in Christmas of 2007, I ended up buying my own console. And then Halo 3 was kind of my first big dive into the Halo universe and really where everything has kickstarted for me personally.
So I decided that when I realized that there was no future in competitive Q-bert, that I should play something different. Now, unfortunately, unlike the rest of you, I was well into my 20s when Halo first came out. Congratulations.
Old man.
You're dad. So I played Halo on a friend of mine's Xbox who I lived with, and we had a community Xbox, like a house Xbox that we played on, and that was how I got started into it, but I never got into multiplayer. I didn't understand, I really didn't get it, what, you know, about the whole gaming community and how important it was to kind of cultivate that and how you could get involved and the opportunities that you had to make friends with a very similar interest list as you. And so I wasn't until I got into an accident about 6 years ago and I couldn't walk for a year that I finally just kicked on the Xbox Live and was like, all right, let's do this. And within a matter of a month and a half, I ran into some people playing a game called Griffball. And it just kind of set everything in motion. And so since then, I've gone from just playing Halo to casting it. I'm producing it, producing part of the Griffball Hub with Rage and taking over the broadcasting from there. And then, yeah, I got this nifty opportunity. I said, hey, you want to make a mobile-themed experience? Sure. Why not? And look what we did. So I would say Halo definitely worked out for me.
Yeah, we're in a really good place. So the Halo community got its start with a fan site called Bungie.org. Who here has heard of Bungie.org? Well, a fair amount of people. No, Bungie.net was the official site.
Yeah,
Bungie.org is this fan site.
Was anybody else really confused when you first started getting into the Halo community and people were calling it HBO?
Talking about HBO.
And you're like, yeah. What? You were on HBO? What?
It's a little bit.
What kind of documentary is this?
So Halo was announced in 1999, and look where we are 20 years later here in this experience.
I had hair then.
Not anymore.
I know. Rip the dream.
And the game actually fostered a multifaceted community. Should I change mics? Should I change mics or am I good? Okay. Am I good mic-wise or... No? All right, I'm gonna share this one then. All right, so with the multifaceted community, there's a lot of different things that Halo, the original game, had to offer. So you had the campaign, you had the multiplayer and all that kind of stuff, which we'll get into a little bit more detail. But with the multifaceted community, you also had kind of the advent of the commodity known as the internet. So that really helped bring a lot of people together and really share the passion that we had with Halo. And the first communities were formed around three different kind of distinct aspects of what I've been able to pull out. So fascination and discussion about the lore, so talking about the campaign, the books, the story around the Halo franchise that has been developed by Bungie, now 343. The LAN party staple, so when consoles games were kind of that couch co-op or you had to be on one console, now you had this ability to network all these different consoles together and really have a massive multiplayer experience with up to 16 players in a house or in college. I know for most of us down here, we probably got experience with either at home playing with friends and inviting them over, or in college where we would have just massive LAN party events.
Hey, listen,
for me, it was definitely
carding,
not college.
I'm very familiar with carting a CRT TV to somebody else's house. It happened regularly. My housemate would get very irritated.
How large? What was the screen size of the CRT?
That one was a 32-inch.
Wow.
It was one of those Trinitrons, too. Remember those? It was a flat screen, but it was just bulky. Yeah. Giant silver box. It's crazy.
And then the competitive multiplayer was another facet that came along in 2002 with MLG hosting competitive Halo events and that getting streamed and eventually televised a couple of times. So those are kind of the three core fundamentals that the Halo games and the universe had to offer with developing the first communities. And what has enabled Halo to foster this community? Well, a lot of it is the diversity and the experience. So as you can see here, there's a lot of different things to do at Outpost, thanks to some of the fine work done by this gentleman right here and plenty of other people here. 405th for the armory stuff as we're in the armory stage and plenty of other things. And as you can see, just with the guests here, there's a lot of diversity in what we have that we're interested in and what we have to say. But that diversity really helps, I think, give us all a home and also brings us all together. Because we've got people that are into customs with Griftball. We've got forging. We've got just overall gameplay and custom nights down at the table. Now, we've had plenty of other people on in other panels like Machinima, fan projects, and a whole myriad of things that really, I think, constitutes why Halo is such a really cool platform to deal with.
Yeah, and Halo is almost a la carte. It's if you're not into one thing, there's something for you. And for something for you, there's a community for that. And
even race.
Even race.
Even race.
Race.
Wow, as soon as you said that, was the word of the day.
And, specifically podcast form, I mean, like Podtacular is news. A couple other shows are very lore specific. A couple other shows are very competitive specific. You got the shows like ours where it's just kind of...
effing around, right?
Yeah, just kind of messing around with Halo. And
Halo's the excuse to get together and have a conversation.
Exactly. And it's one thing that's really cool about the community is... 343 kind of helps foster all that under that one big umbrella.
Yeah, I mean, it really kind of established, really, really early, especially whenever you look at what's out there now. You know, it was kind of like the first real, it was like about as deep as like a PC game back when Halo 3 came out. I mean, with Forge, it was just crazy powerful whenever it came out, and they just, they keep ramping that up. The depth of customization and the custom games and everything. I don't know. I kind of just stick to Halo, so I really don't know that what's out there nowadays. I don't know if games are just starting to catch up or what, but
there,
I mean,
there's not.
Yeah, I didn't think so. But I mean, 2007, you have to think, like, it's crazy. I mean, there really is something for everyone. And I think that that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think it's good.
So the lore is a big piece of it. The ever-expanding universe and the fiction that goes behind the Halo universe is ever-evolving and ever-changing. You've got kind of some revolutionary game mechanics that Halo is well known for. The 30 seconds of action, an immersive first-person experience, and a lot of intuitive controls that have come out that was initiated by Bungie. Like, you had shooter games on N64 and all that kind of stuff, but Bungie really honed in the first-person shooter control experience for console and has kind of been a staple for other first-person shooter games on the console experience.
Something that's hard to appreciate these days because, you know, there's so many shooters out there on the console, but, I mean, it really was, like, the first game to, like, get it right. I mean, GoldenEye got close, but, you know, you can only work with what you got, and there was only the one analog stick, you know, so... You know, it wasn't the developer's fault that you didn't have a second analog stick, although there is a layout where you can use two Nintendo 64 controllers at the same time, one in each hand.
That's a little complicated.
Yeah.
That'd be intense, yeah.
but yeah, we take that for granted now, you know, however many years later, but it, you know, Halo kind of... ushered in a lot of firsts, you know, was one of the first to really be popular, like online, you know, and all that, you know, Forge, like we mentioned. But like, really, I think the first one, and really, I think maybe the most important one was like nailing the shooter on the console, making that work.
Yep. And just for that, like the endless hours of multiplayer that everyone enjoyed, even with like the first game with LAN party.
Mm-hmm.
Another part is just the evolution of the game. So looking back to Halo 1 to where we are now, you have networking capabilities, you have online matchmaking, a customized experience for forging, armor customization, a lot of different ways to kind of make your own identity with playing Halo, allowing other users to share content. So coming up with screenshots, films, forge art, which there's some insane forge art.
Oh yeah,
that's out there. You have other custom community game modes like Rift Ball and Race in a way, because Race 3 brought back. Infection was started from a Halo 2 customs called Zombies, and a lot of these other little customs that have become official game modes. And then you have the universe that's ever expanding and all the different things that add to the game. So you have the books, you have the alternate reality games, you have comic books and novellas and all this additional content that feeds into the lore of Halo. And that really helps kind of give the lore community a lot more things to pull from as well. And there's a mutual developer community relationship. So things like this wouldn't happen if there wasn't a community desire for it or community feedback to say, hey, it'd be cool if I could do an escape room in the Halo theme, or hey, it'd be cool to actually see a ring experience unlike the way I've seen it before in the Halo games, or hey, look at all these people in armor and bringing Halo to life.
Right.
Like, it's the community desire to bring all this stuff to life that is the result of this happening.
I remember my first time I saw someone in a Spartan cosplay and being able to walk up to somebody that you normally see in a game, you see on a screen that is this big or larger, whatever, in real life and can actually touch, like shake their hand, stand next to them, get a picture with them. It's extraordinary. And now we're surrounded by dozens. And these are some extremely detail-oriented pieces of armor that are absolutely tremendous and some that I've never even seen before. But it all comes from the love of a video game.
Yeah, and like even today, like we had our kids here earlier today, and every single Spartan that they saw walking by, they were just, you know, I want to take a picture. Like, go. They had so many pictures with them. They loved picking up the weapons, you know, and stuff. It's fantastic. They were having a blast.
And it all started, like, the initial reach out from the developers to the community, other than releasing the game, of course, was Bungie had these hump day challenges where back in the day of Halo 2 clans, they would take different groups that had different clans and play with them in a very just fun manner. But it was a way for them to kind of interact with the community and really get some feedback and just an overall great experience there. But then as things get more and more involved with the games going forward. You have community-made content, so you have, I mean, example today is all the Halo 5 matchmaking refreshes is done by community content. Everyone going out there and making Forge maps and making new game modes and keeping the experience in Halo matchmaking alive and fresh and feeling like brand new since day one that Halo 5 was released. And you also have game creators now engaging in community content events. So you'll see 343 doing the community spotlight every other week. And that's where the developer is showcasing people's content that they've gone out of their way to make because they just love the game. So you have the developers recognizing that passion and being able to bring light and bring exposure to what other people are doing within their communities. That's another, I mean, that's kind of a modern day thing with social media, but just to see that Halo has evolved to adapt to that and make that one of their core fundamentals is a really cool thing to see with Halo. And it's a good thing that makes Halo home for me and most of us up here.
We have to take your word that they spotlight people.
Yeah.
I have no firsthand knowledge of this.
One day you'll get there.
I'm at the point where I don't want it now.
It's also not entirely true either.
Shut up. No one asked you.
Yeah, and to the point of how important it is for developers to have these close interactions with their fan base, the two game types I think of especially are Griftball and Infection. These were just simple custom games as far back as Halo 2. And then you go into Halo 3, into Reach, and all of a sudden they're just game staples. They launch with the game. And then they just allow these communities to develop and thrive because they gave them that special attention.
Yeah, and there's other, like, back whenever Halo 5, you know, just released, I know Tom French, you know, was the Forge lead there. And pretty much there's a lot of times he would go on Twitter or just anything else. People would be tweeting at him just everything that he wants in, like, everything what people want in Forge. And they would eventually put it in there, like, we got materials in Halo 5 that wasn't there at launch, so our walls won't just look bland. They actually look like bricks or, you know, just anything else like that. So they listened to what the community wants, and he was able to add, you know, different assets and everything like that into Forge later on.
Can I ask you a question? How much did Forge evolve from Halo 2 Anniversary to Halo 5?
Ridiculous.
Yeah. How much did Halo 5 Forge evolve, just Forge in general, from all the Forges?
Yeah, I think
it's a better question.
I just remember, because I'm...
So I
sorry
can,
to say,
or
I
come back tomorrow.
Yeah, we have a Forge panel tomorrow. An interesting thing about Halo 2 Vista, like, it was the first quote unquote map editor. And what also made it interesting is, like, the big thing right now is on Halo 5, you have the custom, you know, games browser, which everyone actually loves, being able to actually go in and do a custom, like, look for a custom game. And technically speaking, that existed on Halo 2 Vista as well, because you could go in and they had a server browser because it was PC. And when if you found someone on a map or whatever, you're like, oh, that's a weird map. You could just do it, and it would download the map right then. Like, it wasn't the old school way of, well, I guess I got to go look for this map and put it in the folder and make it run. Like, it would instantly download it, kind of like we have nowadays. But I can say for a fact, as someone who tried to make something back in those days, it was nowhere near as robust. Like, it wasn't the nice, simple Forge-style map editor back in Halo 2 days. It was a very, like, Unity engine kind of map editor, like
more of a proof of concept.
Yeah, you had to actually
slash beta.
You had to know what you were doing when you were making a map, instead of just going like, I have this framework and I'm going to make a map. It was, all right, I hope you know how to code in land and I know how to code in whatever. Like, so yeah, people who made maps, it was like a big deal.
And I remember in trying to mess around with Halo 3 and realizing I had no idea what I was doing, to Halo 4, where it was very user friendly. And once you could figure out, like, how to, you know, the magnets and how to magnetize the walls so you get all of your edges clean and straight, it was a lot easier for very novice individuals like me to put it together. You get to the level of complexity that is involved in Halo 5, especially if you're on the PC end of it. And I don't have the requisite skill set to understand this properly. And so I default to people like Duquesne to do it. And I just sit there and watch and go, huh, well, all right, that's a college education I can't afford. Neat.
I just asked because I remember I'm not into Forge hardly at all, sorry to say. But I remember watching a video whenever Halo 2 Anniversary came out about, like, the new Forge stuff, and I was really blown away. And Halo 5 and Halo 2 Anniversary came out at a relatively close, you know, amount of time. I just didn't know like how much they iterated on it between those two.
It's pretty much like, you know, Halo 3, very basic forge.
Yeah.
Halo Reach was a massive leap, you know, between those two forges. It's kind of similar to that. Halo 2 Anniversary was, it was still way better than what like Reach and stuff. And
yeah,
because it introduced scripting and things like that. But then going to Halo 5, it just blew everything up.
Wow.
And Halo 5 let people become so creative what they can create. Griffall maps are just a box, and somebody made a map where they made an entire bathroom, and the court is the bathtub.
Yep. Yep. It was hilarious.
I mean, there's maps like, on there nowadays that like are practically their own missions. Like you can go on there and it's a mission that's the map. Like you have to collect this, this, and this, and then go to this, and it unlocks this door and all this, that. And you're like, I thought we were just going to play Slayer. But there's this whole like story that you have to actually unlock just because of scripting and everything else that you can add to it.
I mean, Crossy Road is one of them, and it gets played on the main stage every event.
Oh, yeah. No, that one, then that's hilarious. And I still can't get it. We had a guy, we had one of our attendees who was part of our Make-A-Wish program in Chicago who got up there. Normally this sequence on stage takes, you know, a good, what, 20 minutes?
Yeah.
It takes about 20 minutes of them going back and forth, people getting killed, them trying to knock each other off in the lava. Ethan just says, nope, and runs straight across and just bolts through. Unishek is sitting on the stage looking at him like, what is happening? And he beats Unishek's record on stage. And we ended that sequence in like 4.5-5 minutes.
That's impossible.
It was like
2 minutes and 45 seconds for that run.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Done.
Wild, man.
Yeah. Unishek can't be beat. So that's, that's incredible.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Yeah.
Those records are missing.
So the Halo community is very diverse in multiple facets. So one of the most well-known is probably the competitive community. Getting a start with MLG, and it's changed hands a few times. It's back in MLG's hands now, but you have a lot of different communities that follow the competitive side of things. So you have Team Beyond, Europa Halo, NoobCombat.com, a couple of competitive podcasts, and then you have kind of a little bit more community side of competitive. So you have Play Griffball, Halo Wheelman, Big Team Battle, and the HWCL. You have Speedrunners, which is also kind of another competitive thing. Yeah, stat tracking. So there's sites that have been doing all the API calls and correlating your statistics together in a more digestible format. And then there's also the ACS Grassroots program, which is highlighting a bunch of competitive streamers who are really trying to push the Halo multiplayer experience forward. You have a lot of casual gameplay, so a lot of the customs or kickback fun type of minigame stuff. So you have Forge Hub, Halo Customs, the Halo Forge Epidemic, community cartographers and Halo Tracks, really kind of trying to get that alternative multiplayer experience, so to speak. Creative arts, so 405th being a very apparent and visual and physical realization of that. From a cosplay perspective, you have all the screenshot and forge art that people are coming up with, which you'll see in a lot of the community spotlight. Renders, animations, drawings, machinima, people making their own music inspired by Halo, other fan games, mods, and projects, and then you have a bunch of content creators talking about different news or theories or other different assets or facets of the Halo community or just the Halo story in general. Universe and lore is also another big, probably not as widely recognized, but it's one of the largest pieces of the Halo community that's out there. It's a little more under the radar because there's a lot of different breakups and divisions there, but a lot of the more notable resources there is Halopedia, the Halo Wiki, Podcast Evolved, Archive Installation, and Halo Alpha. They also have all-encompassing news sites and communities, places like halo.bungie.org, the Halo subreddit, Ultimate Halo, and the Halo Hub, and then you have people that go out and collect all the Halo merchandise that you can think possible. So all the figures, all the legendary.
I try, but she won't let me.
So. Hey, I just want to throw a plug into, what was it? Halo Conversationalist, sorry, as another podcast that's very lore heavy. Those guys are always my go-to whenever I have questions.
Can I ask a question to the audience? How many of you have read any of the books? Okay, so
I see
Ted in the background. So one of the things that I love about the books, and this just goes back into the lore conversation, because you get into these games and you can play them. I was not a big reader until I picked up Fall of Reach and discovered that it read like a video game. And so I went on and read them in the order that they came out, and one by one by one realized, okay, I actually, not only can I read, but
who knew?
I enjoy it because it's about a subject matter that I really like. And it's, and for a lot of the, how many people in this audience are parents? Yeah, see if your hands. Great way to get your kids back involved in books. If they love video games, get them books about the games that they love, because it's going to read like a video game. And if that triggers some form of, you know, literary involvement that is in the universe that helps expand their understanding, knowledge, and experience within the game, then you've just added to the accessibility for them and how that integrates with not only their education, but their experience with the universe as a whole, as well as the rest of the community.
And I just want to kind of put my support behind the audiobooks. Unlike you, I can't read. and so having someone read it to me, you know, I feel like I, you know, I have like an assistant with me whose only job is to read to me whenever I want them to. But yeah, I've lit all the Halo books that I've gone through. You know, I say I read them just so I don't have to like go into explanations each time. But yeah, I've listened to them all, and they're very, very good. So if you're someone who's like, I'd kind of like to, you know, get more into it, but I just don't think I have the time and whatever, give the audiobooks a try, because
it can be very choice.
It can be intimidating.
I highly recommend you pick them up.
It can be intimidating with how many books are out there, but Fall of Reach is a must. That's the start point. If you're in here in this audience and you have not read Fall of Reach, you're doing yourself a disservice. It's a phenomenal book.
Yeah.
The Forerunner trilogy is also something I would recommend, especially because it plays such a big deal into the Halo 4 campaign. If you go back and read the books and then you go back and play the campaign, you're understanding a lot more of what's going on with the story. And
I think it changes both.
It is a very complex read, though.
Yeah, I was about to say, I think that the Forerunner books, they're the difficulty setting legendary to get through those books. Like, it's a tough, like, I own all three. I've tried to get through them more than 10 times.
I don't.
And I can, you know, never, and I get
know,
through it.
I know why. And this is one of those things that I had to realize, because as the difficulty for me with that was because this is an aspect of the universe that predates everything that we've played. And while it does explain and paint the baseline for everything that we're going through in the Halo universe, in these games, in the background of the Forerunners, these of the other books, the fact that these are Spartans, the Adventures of Spartans, hello, we play these regularly over and over and over. We have suffered through their adventures and saved mankind, you know, dozens of times on different difficulty levels sometimes. But you're talking about engaging in a universe that we haven't actually painted that picture in our imagination yet. And you really get to draw deeper into your own psyche as to how you want to paint this background based on the few pieces that we have of that universe in game, and then really help evolve that in your own head. And I thought, once I get through that block of, okay, this is what I'm going through, starting to picture it and really painting the way that I thought, if I were to make that a video game, if I were to make this something that was playable, how would I want this to look and how would I want this to feel? And that actually kind of keyed in the rest of the interest in completing those books. And once I got through them, there's a lot more in the background of anything that's Forerunner in these games that makes a lot more sense, because I've gone through that process of kind of figuring out what purpose these served way back in the day.
See, my problem was I had a hard time, like with all the other Halo books, you're obviously reading about, you know, humans, and like, you know, we all know what we call this planet, right? It's Earth. Like in the first book of the Forerunner trilogy, I had no, I almost let one go, Deathstorm. I caught myself. Yeah. I had no freaking idea that Heir to Tyrene was Earth. Like I just beat, like they have different words for everything that we have. Like, so it was, I'm just like, what the hell are these guys talking about?
It's
like,
a lot to keep track
of.
It was
hard to like really buck, you know, concentrate really hard on what I was hearing, because it's just like, wow, it's almost in a totally different language.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that was one of the things that was really hard for me. It's just on a, you know, I don't even know what all the tools are called, you know, much less ask me to make something with them. That was one of the really hard things for me. And I was very shocked to learn that they were talking about Earth the whole time in the first book. I truly had no
idea. Spoiler alert!
Spoilers.
I just said they talked about them. I didn't say where it came in.
That's really good. And I cannot for the life of me remember what the book is called, but it was the one that was the collection of short stories.
There's two of those. There's Tales from Slipspace and Fractures.
Yeah, it was Fractures, and that was one. That one was good because it was nice because instead of feeling like you had to commit to the whole thing, you could just read like a bunch of little ones and just kind of stop and then come back in and stop and then come back in. So that way you didn't feel like you had to like pick up the book and go, all right, I must now read this. You could just like, it was a good introduction to like get little bits of the story without feeling like you had to read the whole book to understand the whole story.
You didn't have to make a large commitment.
Yeah. You didn't have to go like, I must read this novel in order to understand the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Halo's had its impact on the community. We've kind of discussed a lot of that already, but with Halo kind of redefining the first-person shooter experience on console, it's kind of laid a lot of the groundwork for a lot of shooters as it is today, from the controls, connectivity, and the experience overall. And Bungie and 343 has made the tools for us to kind of have our own self-expression and our self-identity within the Halo universe. So the fact that there are so many diverse ways to get involved with the community is just kind of evident to that of what the Halo community has made for themselves within the confines of the Halo franchise and what the Halo franchise really enables, just from the game's perspective. But there has been kind of the other effect as well. So the community has had their impact on Halo, and we've touched on some of those already as well. But developers soliciting and responding to community feedback. So for anyone that has been a part of the MCC Insiders program or the Halo Insider program, them going out to the community and saying, hey, we actually want to engage the community to help us make the experience better and what you guys want. So we're actually going to solicit that community input and see what you guys think. In addition to that, developing the custom games and the maps for refreshes and on MCC and Halo 5 and all the other Halo games that have preceded that as well, supporting those custom maps and game modes functions. And then developers are actually hiring some of the fans for Halo. So you'll see some people like Grimbrother 1. He was part of Halo.Bungie.org.
Grimbrother
1. He got hired on to be to work on the lore side of things. And you have several forgers that have made their mark in the forging community and now are at the studio. And the Psycho Duck is a prime example there. So there's a lot of ebb and flow within the Halo community of the developers interacting with the community and community interacting with the developers. And it's just really, I think that's one of the pretty unique things about the Halo franchise that you don't really see in many other AAA title games.
Yep.
And what makes a community thrive? So there's a niche that every community has found a way to kind of capitalize on an audience, and that's where people will kind of be attracted to and really make a way for other people within that community to latch on and expand upon their knowledge or expand upon their experience. So if you're interested in the custom games, then you'll get involved with the customs community and really see all the different mini game components and different ways that you can play Halo, which is pretty fascinating. And then all the lore stuff. So whenever there's a new book or new comic or a new article, a new cannon fodder, it's just expanding the ever increasing amount of knowledge for Halo that exists out there. Another part is interacting on social media, being able to respond to different people that are interested in what you're doing. Being a friendly face is always a plus. If you're open to people wanting to be interested in what you're doing, then let them come in. There's a lot of different people out there. They're interested in a lot of different things. And for some people that are just testing the waters, maybe they're interested in one thing and maybe it's not quite what they expected, so they'll go to other things. But be open, be accessible, have a social media presence, and spend the time and energy that it takes to engage with your community, because it's not a simple job. It's not an easy job, but if there's a community out there, then the leaders of that community are putting the time and effort to make that community a staple in what it is today.
Yeah, that's a big one, being accessible. I know, like for us, whenever we got like an iTunes review, we would, you know, read it on the show. And then people are like, oh, that's awesome. I got my review read on the show. In reality, it's like, we live in Dallas and I work in logistics. Like, we're not that, you know, we're not that important.
Speak for yourself.
We just happen, you know, to do a show. And
there's a reason you're not on the show anymore.
And then people, you know, they listen. Yeah, exactly. I was fired. People listen and then they want to contribute. And then, you know, I've heard from multiple listeners and, you know, who I call friends now, that the reason they got so interested was
they played Halo, Halo 2, CE, 3 with their friends at home, and then their friends stopped playing, and then they didn't have anyone to play with anymore. And so we were, you know, very welcoming. Everyone come in, and we had levels of players who were champ level, Onyx, Diamond, Platinum, Gold, like literally everything. And you had your subgroups of people who like to play with each other. And so instead of playing with their friends at home, they made new friends online. And then, you know, when you're accessible, that makes other people, that inspires other people to do their own thing. Like, I know we've had almost a dozen different listeners kind of tail off and do their own thing. And
They're
building their own community. And it just kind of stems from there. So I think being accessible, that's a huge one in terms of just growing a community.
I think, though, that the most important thing about growing a community is being authentic and, you know, like not trying to be someone you're not, because people can sniff that out. I mean, it, you know, if you're trying to basically, you know, put on your, you know, don't I'm super cool.
Best
like I'm super cool. Everyone.
Yeah, trying too hard.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
don't act MLG if you're not MLG.
You see people who are. What'd you say?
I said, don't act MLG if you're not MLG.
Well, it's just, you know, you can spot that easily in other people. Like, don't you know, you're not pulling one over on everybody either. I mean, everyone else can spot that, but like for Travis and I, like we never started Drunken Halo to like, let's build a community.
Right.
Like, we just.
I remember our first community.
You can interrupt me, it's fine.
Playdate, yeah. Our first community playdate back in Reach, we had one person show up. And we were like, oh, that's awesome. And like, us three just played for a couple hours. And then we talked about it on the next show. And then it's grew bigger from there. But yeah.
But yeah, but like, we didn't start out thinking like, you know, we're going to like try to be successful in the Halo community, you know, and like try to grow something out of our show. Like, or at least that, you know, that was never my intention. Like, all I wanted to do was, you know, create a podcast. And like, that's like, I'm not good at the social media stuff. Like, I'm just being honest. I really don't care. You know, like, I'm not
that's
really.
That's why we were a good team.
I'm not really interested, like, in what you have to say. And I'm really not too interested in, like, putting what I'm thinking out there. I just think, you know, I've got other stuff to do. Like, it's just not for me, the social media stuff. But like Travis was, you know, I mean, anyone in the crowd here is better at it than me, but that's where like Travis picked up the slack was, you know, like, you know, he was the guy who kind of stepped in and kind of became like, you know, the, you know, more public face of the show. But it was weird, like, you know, we did our first 20 shows or so with nobody, like, ever writing in or anything. And then, like, within, you know, we finally hear from, like, the first listener. And then, like, within 3 months, we had to, like, we would do shows that were 3 hours long whenever we had about an hour and a half of content, because we had so many, like, comments and emails and stuff to read.
Yeah, like, made it a point to read it all.
That was a mistake.
Good feedback, but
but yeah, like, it, you know, fast forward, so we started in 2011, fast forward a couple of years, and like, you know, at some point, you know, listeners made a forum for us. We got really big on Slack, the Drunken Halo Slack page. How many members?
Basically Discord. There's a couple, few, I think 200 to 300 members in there.
Yeah, it was weird, like, the community kind of found us.
Right.
Like, we didn't set out to do it. It just kind of happened.
Well, and that's a good point, too. Like, if you put a community out there, people that are interested in what you're interested in will come and find you and will join up because you're doing something that they're also interested in doing.
Right.
But, you know, that's what I mean about being authentic. You know, just being you, you know, do what you do best. Like, don't try to, you know, don't listen to Podtacular and think like, so Duststorm's successful. Let me just do what Duststorm does. And then I can, you know, become as successful as Duststorm. Like, there's already a Duststorm out there. Like, God knows, we don't need another one. No.
No.
But like, you know, don't try to be something you're not. Because if you just be you and, you know, you do it well, then you'd really be surprised, like, what's hiding around the next corner.
Yeah. So we've got some a lot of different communities up here. So I'm going to start with DJ on talking about how he got his start with the kind of the public side of his Halo career.
So Griffball Hub, it was an accident, honestly. I had been in an accident, and so I couldn't walk for 9 months, and I started playing. We happened to meet a guy in a game that kicked our butts, and it was one person versus four, and he held us off when we couldn't score the final goal, and he ran the clock out. The guy's name is Man Cannon. He later on came to be on a world championship title holder for Griffball. And so me and my brand new Xbox friends, my first four Xbox friends ever, we kind of rolled into Griffball Hub, signed up, and yeah, they heard my voice once, and they asked, we got into an Xbox Live party. The owner, Goose Checka, asks what our team name was, and everyone's like, say it, DJ, say it. But I said, we're the NSAA. We're never serious about anything except Griffball. She says, oh my gosh, why aren't you streaming? I said, I don't know what that means. Why are you shouting? So,
DJ, why are you shouting?
Yeah, I know. So it just took one instance of engaging with the community, taking a chance of getting to know some different people that like to do the same thing that you do. And that's when I first started casting, and it turned into a massive, massive career. So, which takes us to Mixer. Yeah, so now I'm a Mixer partner. I am one of the Fortnite and Apex Hype Zone live casters. If you've been to PAX, you've heard my voice over there, like I said earlier. And I have a massive community, a little over 11,000 followers right now. At least that's massive for me. I'm very happy with it. Hey! And they actually miss me right now because I'm only streaming every other weekend. But as something to speak with what you said about authenticity, doing your own thing, I am really good at losing video games. I am incredible.
I don't know, man.
Yes, you are.
My nickname is the Respawn All-Star, also as the king, the god of Respawn. Why? Because I do it really well. So I just had to kind of own it and be okay with it.
It's entertaining.
In a game with a gun, it's tragic. I'm really good at SWAT-nems because I'll run around and punch people because I don't know how to shoot the gun very well. I'm terrible at aiming. Now put a hammer in my hands and I will destroy everyone.
I'm pretty positive the game loads Nerf ammo in all my guns.
Right? There we go. But owning what you're good at and knowing, all right, well, you know what? Here's the thing. I'm not going to be really great at sniping people, but you know what I can do? Sneak up with a hammer and try and hit them in the back of the head. Why? Well, because that's the only thing I'm good at.
And he's very entertaining if you can't tell.
So, you know, and that it just kind of picked up and went on, but I wouldn't have been able to do what I do without having been part of a massive Halo community to start with. And now I do World Halo Nights on Sunday whenever I'm at home, which we have Halo fans and players from Brazil and Germany and Australia, and we all come together from all over the world simply because we have a love for Halo. In fact, I'm going down to Australia at the end of September to spend several weeks with my Mixer community, and a large number of them are all Halo fans because we all happen to like the same thing. And it's really interesting that we're able to break through those social norms, whereas when I was a kid, you know, you were kind of subject to your locale as far as who you were able to be friends with because we were next door neighbors. We went to the same school, went to the same church. That was pretty much all you had. Now, we find people with very specific niches of interest that are like-minded people. And you find those people, you engage with those people, and suddenly they become friends. And in a lot of cases, they become family. You know, Dusty, we've known each other for, a few years, and we're basically
about
like brothers.
About 5-6 years, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, same thing with Rage. Rage and I, but yeah, it's like we've known each other for life.
You're old enough to be my dad.
That's scary. So
he's old enough to be all of our dads at this point.
Hello, children. Yes.
Kitty.
It's about engaging and finding those positive interactions you have with people and really helping to foster that into a relationship, into a friendship that is meaningful. And in doing so, you're doing so. It's because of a game. And it's inspiring and also awkward to talk about because you have to admit, hey, yeah, we met because of a video game. But in fact, we're lifelong friends because we have the same interests.
Which kind of led you to this.
Yes, Halo Outpost Discovery, the accidental thing that happened. So we were, I think I'm allowed to tell this story. We were actually at, so at PAX every year, they invite a very small group of collective people to a special day at 343. And we get to sometimes see some behind the scenes stuff and other things that were signed under 9 NDAs that we can't talk about. But they brought us in a room and said, hey, here's the thing. We're going to look at doing this. And we'd love to see you guys' feedback. And of course, once they finished, I put my hand in the air. Is there any questions? Like, yes, here's the thing. So, and I started going off at about 90 miles an hour with all these different things I was thinking of, everything from line management to which clearly we're working on. Two.
You weren't the only one. I was with KP for about 30 minutes to an hour.
And so they pulled several of us aside and said, well, we'd like to hear more about this. And I got home from PAX and 2 days later I was contacted that, hey, we'd like to talk to you about this project we're doing. And it became this. And so I left my job at Microsoft to work for the Harlem Globetrotters and Hirshen Live. And that is who, to create this amazing thing. And I'd say for year one, it's pretty awesome.
I would agree.
Yeah.
And so going off of Griffball Hub and DJ Story, it's the same community that has moved on to playgriffball.com. And I think it's just the perfect example that there is something for you no matter who you are in this game, because Halo is known as, it changed the way we play first-person shooters, but we don't have any guns in Griffball. We use hammers and swords. Exactly. Yeah. There are no guns at all. So if you're... there's always something for somebody, no matter how you want to play the game. And you'll be surprised where you'll find these communities, because Griffball is seen as a very casual game type, but it's actually been the competitive community that has kept it going for 12 years. At the start of every game with Reach, Halo 4, and Halo 5, we get a big influx of players who want to play it casually. But as the years goes on, the numbers naturally dwindle down, and then we're left with the same core competitive players that just have the special passion for the game and have allowed it to continuously build no matter how much it changes. In Halo 4, they introduced passing into Griffball, and it changed the way we play the game completely.
Oh, yeah.
That wasn't the favorite thing for some players, but then we got a brand new influx of players that wanted to play that competitively. And then so it's just a whole new set of players to come by. And we've recently gone back to Halo 3, and then all the players that love the Halo 3 and Reach way of playing, they have all come back. So it's that same community from 10 years ago that are now just 10 years older. Some of them have kids now, and then they want to play, have their kids to play Griffball. And it's just showing there is something here for everyone, no matter how old you become and how you want to play the game. There's something there for you.
And I think that in its heyday, Griffball had 16,000 competitive players worldwide. We were set up into divisions. We're like regional divisions, and they would compete down, and then finally those different world teams would come together and finally go head to head. It was, the lag was ridiculous, but it was still awesome. So,
and just to add one thing there, at one point Griffball was the competitive experience for Halo when there was no Halo 4 competitive experience. That was the competitive experience, and it technically is now the longest consistent running. The AGLA is the longest consistent running Halo competitive league in existence today.
Yes, the AGLA started December of 2007. So,
and if you'd like to find out more, head on over to playgriffball.com.
As you can see, he still works for me.
All right, I basically started out just because I wanted people to be able to notice my maps. I uploaded them onto YouTube, and so hopefully someone can download the maps, you know, one or two people, I don't know. And it just kind of blew up from there because I made a lot of themed type of stuff, Harry Potter, Star Wars, you know, everything like that, because that catches people's eyes. And so pretty much I started getting more popular on there on YouTube and moved over to Mixer. Still have a YouTube channel, but don't do as much there. YouTube has some issues. But, you know, started streaming stuff on Mixer, which is a fantastic platform. Have a lot of fun. I just love to interact with all the community and everything, like basically immediately. And so it's just a lot more fun that way.
All right. So for our show, we started, you know, as previous stated, 2010, 2011, back when the only other Halo podcast around was Podtacular.
And not to say there weren't others before, but the only one of the only ones going was Rob's show.
Right. And whenever Justin said, hey, you know, because he went to school for audio engineering, he's like, hey, I want to start up a podcast. And, you know, again, this, everyone listened to podcasts now. I'm sure everyone's got all their podcasts they listen to. Back then, it wasn't as popular. And so I was like, I don't even know what a podcast is. And he's like, all you got to do is talk into a microphone, which is great because I don't know anything about any of the setup. Even to this day, I don't know anything. And so we just kind of started, and the shows went from, you know, being 3 hours long to just really literally, like, our run sheet was maybe three words. Like, You talk to a lot of shows now, their run sheet is like 2 pages. With ours, it was...
How long is your run sheet, Death Storm? For a typical show.
Our run sheet is... Like, we use OneNote, so it's probably the equivalent of like half a page.
Right. And so ours, and there's nothing wrong with that at all. In fact, ours probably could have been more structured. But we just kind of, you know, we're brothers. We have that community, like that...
Chemistry,
that's the word I'm looking for. It's a hard word.
It is a hard word.
But yeah, so we just got that natural chemistry. So we would just have a couple topics, and then that's what we would talk about, and it would just naturally flow.
Yeah, we had like an idea of like, we want to eventually get to like talking about, you know, and about comparing like the BR, the DMR, the carbine, and, you know, like the Magnum, or just, you know, just as a dumb example. Like, we knew that we wanted to eventually get to that point, but like, we didn't have like, okay, here's the open. We're going to first do news, and then we're going to talk about like what's up. Like, it was about like, it was just about like having an honest and real conversation, you know? Like, the Halo part of the conversation will present itself when it's ready to. You know,
right? I'd be like, "Hey, what are we talking about on the show today?" Oh, I don't know. All right, well, let's record.
Do you have anything? Not really. Yeah, I don't either.
And then we do a 3-hour show. You know,
and that was all by design. You know, it's not like we started thinking like we'd have all these things and then we like ran out of ideas. In fact, it was actually quite the opposite.
Yeah.
But you know, we started, with. Like, that was the whole, like, idea behind the show from the very beginning was, because, like Travis said, I'd been to, you know, school for audio engineering. I'd also been to school for radio broadcasting. And I remember just how strict the professors were, you know, about make sure you start your news part of your show, like, right at this time. And, you know, it's not... Iraq, it's Iraq, you know, and just like all these like really nitpicky things. And like, I hated it so much because I wanted to talk, you know, and it was just like a total disillusionment with the whole thing. And so it was kind of like, you know, I just like developed this really like, I guess, rebellious attitude towards the whole thing.
Well, that goes, one of the bullet points, one of the earlier slides was being unique, you know, finding a way to separate yourself. And I guess our show is pretty different than any other Halo show that's out there, podcast specific, because we talk about everything. We talk about whatever we want to talk about. You know, the news doesn't so much dictate what we talk about. It's something that happened in our life. Some shows, there's no Halo talk at all. But that goes into the authenticity of just being brothers and having that chemistry. And, you know, we talked and people decided to listen to it.
We tricked a lot of people.
Yeah. It's good stuff.
It is good stuff.
All right, so now the fun part. So Cyberline Films is probably going to be the latest iteration. You may have heard of Cyberline Games. You may have heard of several variations of the name. We went through several variations of the cast. I think we started back in Halo 2 Vista days, ironically with Dustin, when he was talking about how he got Halo 2 Vista. And they were talking about the whole, like, oh, you make friends online and everything like that. Yeah, that is actually 100% me and Dustin's story.
We were in each other's weddings.
Oh, yeah, that's the level that we've gone to. Like, I've been in his and he's been in mine. So if you ever wonder if a community can keep going, yeah, it's 100% the case. But for Cyberline Films, it was literally one of those things where we were like, hey, we have computers, we should start making stuff. And then a couple other people joined and were like, yeah, we could make stuff. And I think Halo Reach is when we actually really had our claim to fame of a series called My Halo Life. Back then, that was when a lot of people were doing like montages, like check out my sick kill streak, check out my sniper montage, stuff like that. And our goal was to provide a montage that was not like skill-based, but more... the concept that we had was, did you see that? And so we took clips that were more, did you see that moments? Like if someone like got hit by a grenade, flipped in their warthog and took out 3 people in the air, that wasn't skill based, but it was definitely, you said, did you see that?
Oh, that moment was skill based.
Well, it wasn't intentional.
That was on purpose.
Depends on what kind of skill you're looking for.
Depends on the skill. So that was the community we wanted to cater to. We didn't want to be elitist and be like, you have to get Killtacular to get into the montage. You could do like one clip I remember specifically. Someone literally just got their warthog wedged up on a tree, and the gunner just stayed there continuing to shoot and got like a triple kill. That was the did you see that moment that we loved.
Straight up savage.
Yeah, and so it was one of those things where we wanted to have that community get showcased, and that evolved into them showcasing the maps, and so that's where Custom Game Night came into play. And what we would do is every Friday night we'd organize everybody together and tell them bring three maps and three game types, put them in your file share, and when we select you, we'll download your game and your map, and we'll play it. And at the very end, we'll decide who had the best, and we'll add it to a list. And then every once in a while, we'll play through the top list. And then we just cycle through. That community has kind of fallen on the wayside lately, mainly just because of the different evolution in 4 and 5. And now with 5 especially, you run your game and you search for it on the server browser. With Reach coming out on the MCC soon, there have been a lot of talks, though, about re-bringing back Cyberline Films. Bringing back the heyday, bringing back some of that like old nostalgia, and just generally bringing back like that did you see that moment, because montages are definitely not a thing anymore, but there's still people that like on streams do those little like clips, and so we want to bring that back of showcasing the did you see that moment.
Yeah. So we have run up against time, unfortunately. If there's someone with a quick question or two quick questions, we'll take those, but we're unfortunately kind of ran out of time. So does anyone have any question?
I can go ahead and answer one I think most people are thinking of. I am single.
Well, thank you for attending the panel. Hopefully you guys will enjoy the rest of your outpost. And if you have a chance, please thank DJ for all the wonderful and hard work.
Yes,
that he's putting into this. He deserves
We wouldn't have done it if it wasn't for all of you. So thank you as well.
So we'll be up and around the area. DJ has to get back to work, but after we take a picture, we'll be around to chat a little bit if you have any other questions. So thanks for coming.
Stay hard, everybody.